Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday. It's 10:36 here in WTMJ from our Avenue Studios in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. He's been here before, Chris Reeder, Executive Vice President at the Institute for Reform and Government. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me back.
So I had the governor on the show earlier. We didn't get to taxation, but we're going to spend some time on that. And I just want to get your thoughts on the budget process, the where we're going to spend our money, what we'll get through the legislature, where will the governor go on that? Will he approve or veto? Just some general thoughts on where that's going, that conversation's going, after today's big decision, which is, of course, on the shared revenue deal.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the budget, you know, this is the hot time of the budget cycle every 2 years. This week and next week are when all the sausage is really being made in Madison. A lot of spending is on the table right now. In the Joint Finance Committee, they approved the transportation budget, $1.5 billion last night. They're approving the education budget. We're hoping that up next soon is the tax reform portion of that budget, where we actually talk about how much should we be taking from the people of Wisconsin, not just how much should we be spending.
And we'll get into the specifics of that in a second. But just where do you think this budget process is going to go, and what will the governor like and not like?
Yeah, I mean, they are, it seems, trying pretty hard, at least on the key issues, to actually come to consensus with him ahead of time. So on the key issues, there will be less of an appetite, I think, for big vetoes when you're talking about issues like the school funding bill. Right. Although we saw some of his allies came out strongly opposed to the education package that he had agreed to yesterday with the teachers union in Milwaukee and statewide opposing that.
To his credit, he said they were wrong.
He did. So it's, you know, the parties are coming together. They seem to be compromising. The one area that there hasn't been much public discussion on yet and where that's going is on tax reform. But the budget generally, all sides are pretty far apart up until maybe a few days ago. It seems to be coalescing now. They should be coming together. The big question is, what does that mean for taxpayers and spending, though? Is it going to be a budget that spends anywhere near what the governor wanted? Hopefully not. He wanted $106 billion, which was a giant growth upon last year's budget. Expect a budget that will be somewhere lower than that, somewhere more in line with inflation, hopefully. But, the final numbers will all come together in the next week of business days.
One of the questions I get a lot is, we have this surplus, upwards of $7 billion. As part of this budget, are we going to get any of this money? Are the taxpayers themselves going to get a check or a credit or something back on that overinvestment in their state government? Because that's what I call it. It's our money.
Right. That is what we are asking for at IRG. We are asking for that money to be recognized as the government has taken too much from the people of Wisconsin, from families, from individuals, from businesses, and it should be returned. It should be returned in a way that is not just cutting a $200 check back, but we don't really change the mechanism behind it. We'd like to change the mechanism behind it so that 2 years from now, we're not building that surplus up once again. The government in our estimation, should take in what they need, not more. They should not be building a surplus of billions and billions. So,
am I wrong in saying that when they do that, it gives them an opportunity to spend more? And I don't like that.
I
just think it provides an easy way to do that.
It makes it really easy for all the special interests in Madison to line up at the governor's door, to go to lawmakers and say, you've got $7 billion here. What's $100 million here or $100 million there? It makes it real easy to make those asks. We think it should be, we should spend that money down by giving it back to the people, not by spending it on new programs and expansion of government. And then we should fix that process going forward so we don't, again, build that surplus back up.
I want to get into tax policy. I'm going to ask a question before the break, and then we'll dig a little bit deeper after. I am fascinated, and you and I talked about this last time you were here, of the idea that we would be a no state income tax state. And the lure, to be honest, both ways, of being a state that can say that. And what's the numbers now? How many states is it?
Yeah, there
around
10? There are 9 states right now.
Yeah. I think there's magic in that. And I think doing that, making that decision, could do a lot to alleviate some of the things that we're going to talk about after the break, which is keeping people here and getting people to come here. On that issue, is it a real possibility? And I'm asking this seriously, that we could have at some point a state like Wisconsin have no state income tax in the near future.
Right. I think it's not only a possibility. Of course, define what you mean by near. If I look at this
couple years,
four or five year cycle. It's possible on paper. The question is it possible politically? We put out a report, a plan to do just that. Iowa is doing it. It's certainly possible. It's plausible. It should be on the table for all sides. Hopefully we can get it done.
All right, we're going to talk about tax policy, what will actually probably happen with our guest, Chris Reeder. We'll take a quick break here. You're listening, of course, to WTMJ. Happy Wednesday, everybody. We're talking tax policy. State of Wisconsin, our guest, Chris Reeder, Executive Vice President, Institute for Reform and Government, in studio. All right, so we talked about taxation in Wisconsin. I'm a big fan of the eliminating of our state income tax. I'm asking this seriously because I think it's a serious question. And obviously, there's a lot of speculation involved in this. If we became, whenever that was, short-term, long-term, whatever it is, a state that had no state income tax and probably a more favorable tax policy in general, what is that an actual draw? Well, there's the weather thing, which we don't have, unless you love cold weather and freezing your butt off in January and February. Is it realistic to expect that like states like Texas or Florida or Nevada, which have that, could we be that draw as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll probably level set. We'll probably never compete with Florida for retirees or that, but we certainly can compete with families who are here in the Midwest. We can certainly be the best in the Midwest. We can draw even more people from our border to the south, from Illinois. We can draw people from Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota has an income tax rate that's higher than ours now, so we are actually seeing a little bit of growth there. Iowa is trying to outdo all of us right now, so we need to stop that. But certainly we can be the best in the Midwest. We can be the best in the Big Ten, however you want to phrase that. And we can be in the ballgame nationally to draw people in. There are other cold weather states that have no income tax, and they're winning.
Give me an example.
You have looking out in the mountain states, right? You have the South Dakota. You have Idaho with a flat tax. You have Wyoming without an income tax. So these are states where they have a lower tax rate and, you know, they're cold weather. So they're beating us on that front at least.
The obvious question is, okay, so how do you replace that revenue, that money that comes in?
Right. Well, a large chunk of it just happens organically through economics. As people as our economy is growing, as people are here, they're spending more and that money is coming in through sales tax revenue. If that is not enough, and it probably would not be, then you take a look at the sales tax. You can increase that by a couple of points. It would still be lower than what people pay in Chicago. It would still be lower than what people pay in Florida, where people are moving to. So you could increase the sales tax by just a couple of points, completely eliminate the income tax in Wisconsin, and have our state revenues be held harmless. If that was your goal. Our goal would be to provide a tax cut as well. So we would actually want to make sure that the sales tax increase does not quite hold government harmless, but is more proactive for families, but is still positive to draw people in.
And that argument makes a lot of sense, especially when you have $7 billion surpluses, because clearly you're taking in too much money. I love when the audience chimes in, and this comes from the old National Bank Talking Text line. If they can't pass the no state income tax, what about not taxing retirees? I think there's some other places that do something on that level, but is that a realistic proposal?
It should be. You know, we would look at it, and our preference would be looking more at a tax cut that hits everybody. So more driving down brackets overall.
Right.
We take the four brackets and try to condense them to three, and then
something
to two.
Some of that happens naturally, but because they have a lower tax bracket,
right?
So they're making less money.
Going at individual, you know, I am always of the mindset that reducing taxes is a good thing. So if what we can get done is only on retirees or is only on certain populations, I'm all for it. I want to see a broader tax cut though that hits across all spectrums. Ideally, that drives some of the top brackets down. Even just a small cut at the top bracket, currently 7.65. That's what hits small businesses. That's where if you can drive that down even just to a little bit under 7%, that actually puts more money into the economy, helps hiring, helps increase wages. So the more that we can focus tax cuts at those brackets, it really does help kind of all the way across the economic spectrum.
All right. I know you're not an economist, but how is the state doing economy-wise? Are we status quo or we're not thriving? Where are we at?
We're not thriving, but we are in line nationally with where we would expect to be. We're looking at average growth. I would say from talking to our friends that are economists at the UW in Madison, we are expected average growth for the next couple of years. State revenue projections, even from the state's economists, are projected to go up from about $20 billion, which is what they collect from sales tax and from the income tax, to about $22 billion in a couple of years. So we're growing. We're still growing, even though slowly or slower than we would hope on the revenue side. But there are some warning signs if you look at our population. You know, our population is aging. Our population is leaving. A large number of folks are leaving every year largely to states that don't have an income tax or that have a flat tax. So there are warning signs on the horizon for if we don't turn things around to try to draw people in, we will not be growing even at average soon.
Your opinion and IRG's is that if we can impact our tax policies, if we could in some way become a no state income tax state, that would stop some of the migration and perhaps flip it.
Absolutely. You know, right now we have about 92,000. The latest data from the IRS, which was from 2021, so a couple years old, but it's the freshest they have, showed that about 92,000 people left the state. And as our researchers analyzed that, about 60% of that went to states with either a flat or a no income tax structure. So people are leaving. Maybe that's not the only reason why they're leaving, but they are leaving, and that's where they're choosing to go. So if we can flip that and we can have those people coming in to start changing our demographics so we're not aging anymore. You know, right now we are one of only 14 states that has a population that is 40 years and older as a median age. And that's not a sustainable population demographic going forward, so we need to draw people in.
It seems simplistic, but the more people earning money, the more people creating businesses, the less all of us have to pay.
Right.
And it's as simple as that. Last thing for you, because this came from the text line as well, the old National Bank talking text line, 855-616-1620. Again, it's speculation. Will we see from this surplus in our hands as taxpayers some form of a rebate, refund, credit, realistically in this budget?
Yep. There will be some form of a tax cut in this budget. We've heard that from legislative leaders. We've heard that publicly from the governor. They've all stated that as a goal. You know, they've done their other big picture, big bucket spending items to date. They've made those compromises or they're finishing them up. This is the next one. So we do expect in the next few days to have a tax reform package come forward. You know, of course, elimination is the ideal. It's probably a stretch for this time around. The governor in his budget called for, significant tax cuts, but they were primarily through credits, and we'd like to see that baked more into the actual rate structure. So yes, we will see a tax cut. The question is how big and how bold, and you know, will be determined by how realistic do the governor and the legislative leaders take this data of tax revenue driving people into the state or not. If they believe that, and if they believe that we really do need to turn things around, then we'll see a larger tax cut, and it will have a focus more at kind of the top brackets to be a driver of the economy.
Yeah, and just to be completely honest, I'm more positive now than I was before the shared revenue deal, because clearly that winners and losers on deals like that suggest there's opportunities in other places. One of them might be how we tax in the state. Chris Reeder, Institute for Reforming Government, Executive Vice President, appreciate your wisdom, and I always appreciate you coming in.
Great. Thank you, Steve.